You know, it's been said that a good friend is like a good bra. They're hard to find, supportive, comfortable. They always lift you up, and they make you look better. And if you have a really good bra, you know what I'm talking about. So thank y'all for having me back. This is one of my absolute favorite places to get to come back and speak to. And y'all, if there is anything that I know at all in this life, it's that we need friends. We need connection. We need laughter. The bottom line is this: we need each other. Every single one of us need each other. You see, it's important to understand this, though, no matter how introverted you might be, that every single one of us in this room are hardwired by God to be in relationship with other people. From the very moment that you're born to the very moment you take your last breath, deep, authentic connection is what your soul craves the most. You see, God designed us to be in community with other women. And so that's what we're gonna talk about this morning. We're gonna talk about the importance of being in community, what Jesus' principles and relationships teach us about friendship, some of the obstacles that are preventing us from being in deep, meaningful connections, and then practical steps that we can create and foster friendship in this season of life that you're in right now. So to start, I just wanna ask you this: why is it important to be in community? Why is it so important? First of all, research shows that 3 in 5 Americans report being chronically lonely. 3 in 5. And not so surprisingly, depression and anxiety are on the rise. If I were to ask you right now by a show of hands, how many of you are lonely? Even if you are chronically lonely, my guess is that very few of you would have an easy time raising your hand. Like, there's like this negative stigma attached to the word lonely. But if I were to ask you, how many of you in this room right now have the capacity for more connection in your life where you are right now? I bet you would have a much easier time raising your hand, right? See, capacity for connection is not a box to be checked, like you find your people and then you're set for life. It doesn't work like that at all. You see, your capacity for connection is constantly fluctuating throughout your life. And connection looks very different for men than it does for women. So in terms of closeness, women tend to experience more depth and platonic intimacy than men do. Women favor one-on-one connections, and that accounts for the depth that we experience, that the more intimate relationships that we have. And men, what they do is they like to usually gather in larger congregation or larger groups of people, and they tend to like to collect a casual group of friends. Because when you're in a big group of friends, it lets you kind of hide a little bit by not having to get personal. And men typically like to be in the larger groups. Also, in our conversations, women, we are more likely than men to talk about things like our mental and physical health, family issues. We tend to be more vulnerable, more personal. But men, they like to talk about current events, right? Political things, sports things, things that are outside of themselves, things that are not as personal. Another fascinating thing is that men, when they communicate, they prefer to be side by side. Side by side watching a game, side by side bellied up to the bar. They tend to, if you have a son, they tend to open up when you're driving in the car or when you're lying down at night in bed with them and you are not face to face. Boys prefer to open up, men prefer to open up when you're not looking at each other face to face. But women and your girls, however, we like that face to face interaction, that face to face connection, right? That's why we choose to sit at a table. That's why we choose to sit at a booth across from each other so that we can make that face to face connection. And we are more intimately involved in the details of all of our friends, right? We want to know everything. Don't leave anything out. Don't leave one detail out. Have you ever seen the video clip of Jeff Foxworthy? He says, I'll do it my best. He says, I get a text one day that says, please pray for Tom. He was in a bad wreck. I walk into the kitchen where my wife was, and I said, hey, I just got a text that says, please pray for Tom. He was in a bad wreck. She said, was he driving? I don't know. I just got a text that says, please pray for Tom. He was in a bad wreck. Or Carol and the kids in the car. I don't know. I just got a text that says, please pray for Tom. He was in a bad wreck. Were the people in the other car hurt? I don't know. I just got a text that says, please pray for Tom. He was in a bad wreck. Well, what hospital did they take him to? I don't know. I just got a text that says, please pray for Tommy. He was in a bad wreck. She said, well, what do you know? You don't know anything. He said, well, I know that we need to pray for Tom. I just got a text. He was in a bad wreck. But again, regardless of the differences between men and women, I want you to know that it is actually imperative. It's imperative for our health that we are in connection, in community, in relationship with other people. Scientists now warn that loneliness is worse for our health than obesity, smoking, lack of access to healthcare, and physical inactivity. And studies show that loneliness is as bad for you as smoking 15 cigarettes a day. But in contrast, people who have strong relationships, strong friendships are actually healthier. They recover faster from illness. They live longer than people who do not have community. Research now shows that having close friendships does more for our overall health and happiness than any other behavior routine. And that's not surprising, because long before there was research done, Scripture tells us that a sweet friendship refreshes the soul. Because y'all, we were made to be in community with each other. One of my favorite stories is by Brené Brown. And she shares the story of a group of women that lived in a remote village in Africa. And they spent their late afternoons every single day at the river's edge washing their family's clothes by hand. They would swap stories. They would ask questions. They would check in with each other. Most days they would laugh so hard that they would cry. And these women were stuck in the throes of poverty, like extreme poverty. But you would never know it, aside from the fact that they had to wash their clothes by hand and their very tattered clothing. But over time, the village became very resourceful, and they started planting crops, and then they were selling their fruits and their vegetables. And they were then able to send their kids to school and upgrade to their little huts to substantial structures. And they actually could wire their lives with electricity. They could dig wells and finally, for the first time, have water. They could even buy a few modern-day conveniences like cell phones, toaster ovens, and washing machines. And interestingly enough, once nearly every home in the village had its own washing machine, they were no longer communing with each other down by the river, washing their clothes. The prevalence of depression among the women in that region rose at staggering rates. Because y'all, we are created to be in community with each other. And you see, historically, people in all countries and all generations have found their friends from a larger group, a larger village of interconnected people. So I want you to check this out. For some of you extreme extroverts, the numbers might be a little higher. For some of you introverts, it might be a little lower, but still it's the same. To give you an idea, research shows that we are capable of recognizing 1,500 people. Have you ever thought about that? I wonder how many people I know. I think about that a lot. Just like, I wonder over my years, how many people do I know? Well, it's about 1,500. One layer in, we find out from research that we can hold about 500 acquaintances. And because of social media, actually, we're inundated with those two layers. But those two layers do almost nothing to satisfy our desire for connection. And then you go another layer in, and we find that we can basically handle about 150 people. These are the people that you would invite to maybe a really large party, like a wedding, or maybe it's your Christmas card list, 150 people. And then once that layer is peeled back, research shows that we are capable of maintaining about 50 loose friendships. And inside that 50, there's about 15 people that, based on how much time we spend with them and to the degree of our relationship with them, they can become part of our inner village. These are the people that you might invite to a birthday party. These are people that you keep up with regularly, and you would really, really miss them if they were no longer in your lives. And then last, we come to the innermost circle right there, and this is the tightest group of people. These are our people. These are our besties. These are the ones that we trust with the most confidential, intimate secrets that we have. The ones who feel like home. The ones that make us feel like we belong, right? And at the very core, we have enough room for about 2, 3, maybe 4 or 5, like this shows. And who sits in your circle, that innermost circle, matters so much because it impacts who you are, what you believe, and how you live in very real, tangible ways. So studies show that we are the sum of the 5 people that we hang out with the most. So another good reason is that good friends are so important is because we become like the people we hang around. for good or bad, our friends impact the quality and the direction of our lives. For good or bad, either way, they impact the direction and the quality of our lives. And what do you know, long before we had research, Solomon wrote, "He who walks with the wise grows wise, but a companion of fools will suffer harm." This is one of the very first Bible verses we had our kids memorize because we believe it is so critical to their long-term health, happiness, and longevity. I hope you're catching on to the fact that long before that, you know, what research is now discovering, the Bible already authored. The Bible already told us. Not only that, but Jesus actually modeled that circle of friendship for us nearly 2,000 years ago. When you take a look at Jesus and the people in his life, it can also be described as a circle of friendships or a circle of layers. And from the outer layer to his inner layer, they are the ones with Jesus shared his meals, his ministry, and his misery. You see, in the outer circle of all the people that Jesus came into contact with, his followers, his acquaintances, those he healed, those he helped, those he fed with loaves and fishes, and everyone else in between, Scripture was clear that he was kind to everybody, regardless of whether they believed in him or not. So in your outer circle, it might include people that you don't have a lot in common with, or people you disagree with, socially, political issues, all those things, those that do not believe the same things that you believe. And for a minute, I'd like to stop and pause and just talk candidly for a minute, because I believe it is so very important to develop the relationships within your outer circle. Because when we do that, when we show them, not that we are like-minded, not that we agree with everything that they, you know, believe, but that we care about them, we can then have influence in their lives. I believe with all my heart that relationships cultivate influence. Relationships cultivate influence. If you don't have relationships with your children, you will not be able to have influence with them. If you do not have relationships with those that don't know Jesus, you will not be able to have influence with them. You see, as Christians, we're called to be fishers of men. And that means befriending people outside of our church walls. I know they told you I love to fish, but I really, really do. And I went to Arkansas to the White River this year. I caught 135 fish that day. And as good as a fisher as I might think that I am, never one time, never once has a fish jumped in my boat. Never once. You see, a fish will never be caught unless a line or a net is cast outside of the boat. And the same is true of people. So it is important to intentionally cultivate our relationships with people outside of the church, just as Jesus did. And I'm gonna step off my soapbox. But next, in Jesus' inner circle that you find, these are the ones that he ministered to. These were his disciples, some people like Martha, Mary, Lazarus. These are the people in his life that he invited in at a deeper and more meaningful way. He poured his life into them and he shared with them a mutual love and passion and ministry with them. They were very, very like-minded. And then for our inner circles, it would be people that we consider truly good friends, right? Maybe the girls in your Bible study, maybe the girls that you're meeting in your small groups here, the ones that you will eventually invite in to a deeper level. And that group is gonna be small and it's gonna be intimate. And then lastly, when you look at Jesus' inner circle, you see three people. Peter, James, and John. These are the three men that Jesus turned to in his misery with everything. Of everyone in the world, these are the three people that were closest to Jesus. And Mark, he wrote, he told the disciples to sit here while I pray. And then he took Peter, James, and John along with them. He began to be deeply distressed and troubled. My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. You see, Jesus had a very, very small inner circle. He confided in them. He trusted them. And long before there was research done on the circles and the layers of friends, Jesus modeled it for us. And every single time we follow his example, it makes our lives better and it makes us better at life. Every single time. Another reason our friendships are so important is because there comes a time in our life that we just cannot carry the weight of what we're going through all by ourselves. And I don't know about y'all, but right now, lately, there are so many people that I know that are carrying some really, really, really hard things. And we need our girlfriends to hold us up when we do not have the strength. I don't know if y'all know what this is, but carpenters know that the building block of a structure is called a joist. And a joist is a special strong beam that supports a greater structure. And sometimes a joist has to carry a heavy load that it starts to weaken. It's too heavy for it. And when that happens, the carpenter will take a board and he will connect it to the left side of the weakening board. And then if that doesn't strengthen it enough, he will take another board and connect it to the right side. And with that extra support, the joist is strong enough to carry almost anything. Guess what this process of adding these joists to the side is called? Sistering. You cannot build a strong, beautiful, complicated structure, whether it is a building or a life, without sistering. We need sister joists. We need to be sister joists. You see, women are strong, special people who hold up the whole world, but sometimes our load gets too hard and too heavy for us to carry alone. Sometimes it's too heavy in our marriages. Sometimes it's too heavy in our parenting. Sometimes in our jobs, in our health, in our finances. And we need a sister joist to help strengthen us so that we can carry that load. When I was fresh out of college, engaged to the man of my dreams, and my parents called off my wedding, you had better believe that I needed sistering. When my perfectly healthy mom died unexpectedly, 150% I needed sister joist to hold me up. When I was 18 weeks pregnant with my eighth child and we were in a terrible, terrible car accident on 400 and I was put on bed rest while I still had to care for a 10, a 9, a 8, a 6, a 5, a 4, and a 2-year-old, you can tell it is a gross understatement to say that my family and I could not have survived without being sistered by our community. And again, this concept of sistering didn't originate with modern day carpenters. It's dated all the way back to the Old Testament. The book of Exodus tells us of the time when the Israelites were in the battle with the Amalekites. And as the battle continued, Moses and the men noticed a pattern. When Moses' hands were held up in the air with the staff of God in his hands, Israel would start winning. But when he lowered the staff, the Amalekites would start to take the advantage. And over time, Moses grew tired. He was old, and his arms would start to drop. And not wanting the Amalekites to overtake their people, two men, Aaron and Hur, intervened. They brought a stone for Moses to sit on, and they physically held up his hands, one on each side. When he grew weary, when it was too much for him, he leaned on them, and they helped carry the weight of that staff. That is a picture of sistering. For so many reasons, friends are vital to our social, our emotional, our mental, and physical, spiritual well-being. Yet so many women struggle with adult friendships, whether it's creating them, losing them, or just finding time to simply maintain them. So why is that? Why is that? What happened? What is keeping us from having deep, meaningful connections when we know that it is so important for our health, our happiness, and our longevity? Well, for starters, it could be one of the three pillars of friendship is missing. See, understanding this was so helpful for me, and maybe it can be helpful for someone in here as well. You see, I fiercely, fiercely love people. I would say that I'm a collector of friends. And once you're my friend, I don't ever want you to leave. I kind of envision my life like this huge round table, kind of like in King Arthur's court. And once you pull up a seat to my table, it's got your name on it. And I don't ever want you to leave. I want you to know that you have a seat there forever. But you see, that's not realistic. There have been times when people have gotten up from my table and they walked away for a little bit and some have come back. And then there's been other times where people have gotten up from my table and walked away and they've never come back. And for so long, to me, it felt like such personal rejection. But I'm learning and I've learned that most of the time adult friendships fade, not always because of personal reasons, but because one of these three pillars is missing. Proximity, timing, or energy. The first pillar of friendship is proximity. And this matters because when we are physically near someone, we naturally spend more time with them, right? It's easier to grow closer to the people that we see all the time. When we got married, we lived in a tight-knit neighborhood, and I became very, very close with some of my neighbors. Like, we were named guardians of two of our neighbors' kids type of close. And then we all moved away to different places, and naturally we have all drifted apart because our friendship is lacking proximity. The second pillar of friendship is timing. And timing refers to the chapter of life that we're in right now. And if we're not in the same chapter of life with someone, it is so much harder to maintain that friendship. You see, I have three older brothers, and we have 23 kids between us. And we used to all be in the same chapter of, no, we're not Catholic, and no, we're not Mormon, but... We used to all be in the same chapter of life, and so we did all the family vacations, all the holidays together, and it was so much fun. They would come to my house, all 35 of us, for the week at Thanksgiving, and it was so much fun. But you see, I'm the youngest. I got married last. I had kids last. And all three of my brothers became empty nesters years ago when I still had like six kids at home. And since their kids are grown and off doing different things, the family vacations became adult vacations. And they vacation and holiday without us because the timing is not aligned right now. The third pillar of friendship is energy. You either click with someone or you don't. But see, the interesting thing is that it can shift over time. Sometimes for the worse and sometimes for the better. And I have come to realize that that means that either I am growing into a new version of myself, or maybe they're growing into a new version of themselves. And Ephesians tells us that we're to grow up in every way. And when we do that, and with growth, there always comes some form of change. In addition to that, I don't know if you know this, but women replace about half of their friend group every 7 years. Every 7 years. You see, there's this natural pruning that happens throughout our lives. So if we're shedding friends almost every 7 years, that means that we also need to be making new ones. So if you're feeling like, I cannot believe that I'm having to make new friends in my 20s, 30s, 40s, even 50s like I am, I want you to know that you were not alone. You were not alone. If you're anything like I am and you take things personally, which I do very easily, understanding these three pillars of friendships can help us realize that it's not always personal. Another potential obstacle is that many of us have approached friendship as we did the same way as we were when we were children. I want you to think about this for a minute. It's super fascinating. I was just talking with someone before this about it. But when we were kids, we just expected friendship to happen, right? When we were little, our friends, our classmates, it all felt like a team moving through life at the exact same pace, at the exact same place, all the way up through school, right? It was like a group sport, for lack of a better word. For the first 20 years of our lives, our friendships were structured and planned for us by other people, by our parents, the school, sports, college dorms, sororities, and all of that made it easy for us to be around people the same age going through the same thing at the exact same time in our lives. See, friendship literally felt like a group sport as we were moving through life. Everybody was invited. Our childhood trained us to believe that we'd always be invited, that friendship would always be easy, that we would see our friends all the time, right? That something fun would always be going on. And then we entered life after college and everything changed. Everything changed, particularly before you had children and you're in this awkward in-between phase, right? And that's when adult friendship become really, really hard because we won't always be invited. It takes so much more effort to have adult friendships because it's very different than what our childhood conditioned us to believe it would be like. Another obstacle, sadly, is time. We live in such a busy culture that we no longer have time for our friends. But you see, generations before us made time for one another. They hung out with their friends. They hung out with their neighbors regularly. And they understood that it is fun to have friends, but friends aren't just for having fun. It's more than that. It's deeper than that. They got it. They got and understood that connection really matters. They got that the only way to build solid relationships is to log time with other people. We all know the old adage, you know, anything worth it takes time. There's no shortcuts, unfortunately, to deep friendship. According to research, it takes an estimated 94 hours to make a casual friend, 164 hours to become a friend, and over 200 hours together to become a close friend. Building connection takes time. We have to make the time for it. We have to make the habit of putting our friends on our calendars. We can't just squeeze them in when we have an extra minute. We have to prioritize them. And again, what do you know? Before there were studies, Scripture told us that friendship is built on frequency. Let us not give up the habit of meeting together. It is so important, y'all, that we log time together. Another thing, and this isn't scripture, but somehow I believe that we have converted to garage door living. We come home from work, the garage door goes up, we drive our car in, garage door goes down behind us. Y'all, I moved almost 10 months ago and not one person has come to my door, not one. I'm 53 years old, trying to make friends in this neighborhood. Not one person has stopped by. I walk my two golden retrievers every single day, and I have only met one person on a walk in 10 months. And I was talking about this with a friend of mine, and I said, I just don't understand why a lot of us don't know our neighbors anymore. What is wrong? What has happened? And she said, you know what I attribute it to? And I said, what? She said, having yard services. And I was like, I don't really know what I think about that. I mean, I mow my yard every day, and I still don't know every, you know, all the time, and I don't know anybody. But then I got to thinking, she's right. For a lot of us, when we bought our first house, we didn't have much money, and our houses were closer together, and we mowed our own yards. We were outside weekly. We knew our neighbors. Now we have bigger homes that are farther apart, and we no longer mow our own yards. We used to walk our neighbor, walk our kids in the neighborhood, right, in our strollers. Now we go to the gym with our AirPods in, or we walk on our treadmills at, you know, behind closed doors at home. It's the washing machine concept, but here in America. Another obstacle in our way is our willingness to dig deep and work on our relationships. We feel this intimacy gap, what we currently have and what we desire, but we don't want to put in the work to close that gap. But in order to close that intimacy gap, we often think we just, hey, it's not that. It's just that I need to discover the right people. It's not that I have to do the work. It's just I need to find a better person, that perfect friend. But when in fact, meaningful friendship is the product of developing the right friendship. It's not finding the right friendship. It's developing the right friendship, and it takes work. Shasta Nelson describes what we are looking for as frintimacy, the experience of meaningful friendship, a heartfelt, supportive closeness among friends. You see, friendships don't start with frintimacy. They're developed. They're developed. So how do we do that? How do we develop frintimacy or intimacy in our friendships? Well, frintimacy requires authenticity and vulnerability. And y'all, that takes work. Those are big buzzwords right now, but that takes work. An analogy for developing frintimacy is exercise, right? So in order to become healthier, we will sometimes look and feel worse before we feel better. We will sweat, our heart rates will increase, our muscles will be stretched, they'll be strained before we become stronger. We go into exercise expecting discomfort and even exhaustion, right? But with friendship, we just want it to feel good. We just want it to be easy. I love the way Lisa Tierkerst describes it. She says, this is how I want it to be. I want the equation to be make a friend, keep a friend. Live in a blissful place of fun connection. See eye to eye, believe the best, get along, be nice, collect hilarious inside jokes along the way, and fight for each other always. That would be great, wouldn't it? But unfortunately, that is seldom the case. It takes work. Because the depths of our friendships only mirror the level in which we are true to ourselves, and we cannot experience intimacy that we crave if we stay on the surface level with laughter and fun. You see, it's really important to note that when we feel the lack of intimacy, the very first place to look is inside. The very first place to explore is ourself. Friendship experts agree that meaningful relationships require authenticity and vulnerability. And it starts with us every single time. What do you know? Paul expresses that friendship requires authenticity years ago. Love from the center of who you are. Don't fake it. Don't fake it. That's authenticity and vulnerability. But let me warn you, if you are willing to risk going deep and being vulnerable with your friends, we have to accept that from time to time, we're probably gonna get hurt, and from time to time, we're probably gonna hurt other people. And if that happens, we have to commit to forgiveness, to reconciliation. So what if we cultivated this forgiveness mindset instead of a grievance-oriented mindset? Colossians charges us to bear with each other and forgive one another. If any of you has a grievance against someone, forgive as the Lord forgave you. You know what's so incredible when we follow God's principles? It removes these obstacles that we've just talked about from our lives. That's what God's word does. What research is now discovering, the Bible knew a long time ago. So lastly, I want to talk about this. What are some practical things that we can do to help make and keep our friends? And we were talking about this a little bit before, but I would say intuitively, a lot of us know what to do. We just don't want to do it. It's hard, it's awkward, it's uncomfortable. And so that's why I wanted to talk about the why behind the what, because if we can understand that it is imperative to our health, to our happiness, to our longevity. And y'all, I'll tell you this, I mean, I'm assuming most of you in here have children. If you are not in a good place emotionally, mentally, socially, and you're depressed and you're full of anxiety, that will impact your children. So if you won't do this for yourself, I'm begging you to do it for the next generation, because we can only help our children as far as we have gone ourselves. So I'm hoping that you will understand the importance of this. You'll see some of these common obstacles, that it's not just you, it's everybody else. And then we can talk about some practical ways that we can make and keep our friends. None of these are gonna be rocket science to you, but I hope you'll understand the importance of why these are so important. So the first thing we can do is show up. Put yourself in environments where you can meet people. As awkward and as uncomfortable it can be, show up and put yourself in those environments. Another thing we can do is go first. Again, as awkward as that can feel, as hard as it can feel, somebody has to send that first text. Somebody has to make that first invitation. Somebody has to make that phone call. Why can't it be you? Go first. Another thing we can do is leverage what you're already doing. Invite someone, if you like to walk, invite someone on a walk. If you love your workout class, invite someone to join you. Maybe just a day date, or go grab coffee, lunch, whatever you're already doing, invite somebody in and leverage those opportunities. Or you can join a group that aligns with your interests, a book club, an exercise class, a volunteer project, service project. If you don't have something that you're already doing, find what lights you up, find what interests you, and go join that group and see if you can find like-minded friends. Another thing you can do is be understanding. Sometimes it's difficult to coordinate schedules as busy moms. Trust me, I get it. But don't be offended all the time and presume that nobody likes you, or, oh, something's wrong with me. It is really hard. It takes effort. So just be understanding if somebody can't make it, or if they have to, you know, call an audible and change the plans. Another thing we can do is make micro moments count. A quick text, a voice memo, or even a funny meme can keep you connected with people that you don't see all the time. This is one of my favorite ways to stay connected. I send about 150 texts a day to different people to stay connected to the people in my lives. If I was driving here today and a friend used to live in Fayetteville, I immediately sent her a text. And then I went to a coffee place and I saw something that reminded me of someone else. Hey, I'm just thinking of you. Or I'll send them a meme that reminds me. That is an easy way to make micro moments count. Or you can set tiny goals. Aim for one text, one call. Make one meaningful connection a day. Or maybe make one a week if you're very introverted and that's hard for you. But whatever it is, set a tiny goal and go, you know what, I'm gonna put myself out there as hard as it is, and I'm gonna send that text and see what happens. We can also create rituals, monthly coffee dates, book swaps, Sunday night check-ins. That will give friendships structure and it will help build momentum. This one is so important. We've already talked about it, but time. Make friends time a priority and protect with all that you can that time together. Put your friend time on your calendar like you would a meeting or a doctor's appointment or a kid's practice environment, you know, schedule or activity. See, if it's not scheduled, it's so easy for it just to never happen or to get bumped off the calendar. I have a group of five friends that we get together with, and every single time we're together, before we all just do it intuitively. Before we get up, we grab our phones, when's our next available time that we can get together? And we have it on the calendar already. Because if you wait, more often than not, it's not gonna happen. Y'all, friendship in adulthood is not effortless. It's hard work. It's hard work. But when we choose to be intentional with that effort and with our time, we can find that meaningful connection is not only possible, it is worth every minute of that sacrifice and that time that we put in. But I want you to understand, and I want you to know, that our friendships are not a luxury. They're a lifeline. There's a big difference. Our friendships are not a luxury. They are a lifeline. And it takes time that we don't think that we have. I want to encourage you today, reach out to that friend who's ever been on your heart, or whoever you keep bumping into at the grocery store or seeing here. Reach out to that friend. Send a text. Pick up the phone. Put somebody on your calendar today. We've got to clock face-to-face hours together. I want you to go sister someone. Be a sister, Joyce, for somebody else that you see that's hurting. Go sister someone. Follow Jesus' example and his circles and his layers of friendship. You see, it's imperative for your health. It will improve the quality and the direction of your life. And above all, it will refresh your soul. I want to say thank y'all for letting me come back here today. I know that's a lot of information that we cover in a short amount of time, but I said this to Meredith and I say it again and again. This group of women is my favorite to speak to because y'all are intentional, you're hungry, your kids are still young, you still have time, it's not too late. And so thank y'all for being purposeful and intentional with your time and being here and letting me come back and join y'all.